All right, well, the election is around the corner, and there is nothing more top of mind right now for our readers than the election. Tensions are high, and our beat here at Paradigm Press is you, our readers and our viewers, and your investment success. So we've brought together some of our best trading minds here at Paradigm to give you our outlook for the election results and our take on possible investment winners as a result. So we're going to get right into this here. I want to introduce quickly our team that we have here today. We have Zach Scheidt, Dan Amos, Alan Nuckman, Byron King, and Enrique Abeda. Welcome, gentlemen. I do want to make a quick note. We do have some people who may be joining this call in the middle of it. So if we do that, we'll be able to get their takes as well. So I really appreciate all your time, guys. Let's go ahead and get started because what I want to know from each of you, and I'm going to start with you first, Alan Nuckman. I want to start with you first, and I want to get your take on who you think the winner is going to be after Tuesday's votes are all counted, and then what's your way to play it? So let's go ahead. Let's start with you, Alan.
Well, I'm going to shift and kind of avoid your question. So obviously we're talking about the uncertainty of the election, but there's always uncertainty in the marketplace. But what's unique about this situation is trading slash investing, which are essentially the same thing, is all about risk control. It's about executing a trading plan. But when you have something of this nature, it becomes a very binary event. So the advantages and the probabilities that you can play are really taken away, and it becomes a 50-50 thing. It's a kind of an all or nothing thing. And
Yeah.
that's not a pleasant way for anyone to invest and or trade. So you've got to think about it yourself as a trader, as an investor. Would you be more upset if you missed out on an opportunity because you were out? Or would you be more upset because you got hurt because you were in? So you have to understand your psychology. The markets are always going to be here. There's always going to be opportunities. Things have changed dramatically. Markets, you can make money up, down, sideways, short term, long term. There are plenty of ways to make money. But what's taken away here, and what's the worst part, is the uncertainty, and this becomes a very, very binary event because you cannot control your risk. Now, to answer your question, I'm not going to answer your question. I don't care about the president, who's going to become the president. I care about two things. Price and performance. The S&P is up 25% or nearly, and it was up 25% last year. And it's not my job, and I'm never going to be the guy that's going to try and identify when a trend's going to come to an end. But at the same time, you also have to have some selling mentality in anything you do. When are you happy with a profit? When do you lighten up on a position? When you have some extreme gains, how do you handle those and so forth? So if you've got some built-up profits and some positions, anything can happen. You don't know what the catalyst could be to take that away from you. You want to make sure that you have realized profits, not unrealized profits that can go away. So those are a couple of things to think about. And I always was been taught that presidents don't make markets, presidents don't break markets. And the trend still remains strong. We're going to get another rate cut. We might get another two, we might get two more by the end of the year. So I don't know what could knock the trend off, regardless, or irregardless is the word I like to use, irregardless of who becomes the president. It's all about price performance, and I'm very impressed by every sell-off, the market comes straight back. So every time the market sells off, it comes right back, and that's an impressive performance. So the question is how to play. The question is how to play and what sectors to focus on. So again, for me, it's about risk reward. There's a lot of stocks that have performed very, very well. Are you the type of person that likes to ride on a momentum play and look for that to continue when there could be profit taking at any time? Or are you the person that wants to look at something that maybe hasn't participated at the same rate and look for that to play catch up and a little bit of rubber band snapback? So the two sectors I'm looking at to summarize what we've got going here is I'm looking at one of the things I've been taught, when you have an event coming up, try and dial out. When in doubt, dial out, meaning don't focus on the short term, focus on long term. What could happen in the next months and or years? And looking at that, I looked at the spiders, the S&P Spider 11 sectors, and the best performing, worst performing. The best performing obviously is tech. The worst performing sector has been the real estate sector. XLRE is what I'm looking at. And I investigated this further. The last 5 years, it's up only 11% compared to tech, up 175%. And as interest rates come down, that could unthaw the housing market, unthaw the real estate market that's been stuck. We're trading at 45 or so right now, 50 with the highs back in 2021. A full V recovery. And what I mean by that is I mean the drop that we had in the last few years on that old top in 2021 projects a move to 65, which is about a 50% gain. So XLE, dial out on that if you can. Look at a five-year chart on that and compare that to the rest of the market. So I think there's value there. I think the real estate market could get unthawed. It's been very disappointing and downtrodden and nothing happening. So that's where I'm seeing the best risk reward compared to the S&P. So S&P in general. Number two is, you know, really no matter who wins, I think the oil market is undervalued. I think the PE of the XLE, which is the oil ETF, being around 8 or 9 compared to the rest of the market being at 21, they're half. That offers some value. And crude's been between 65 and 85. I have been disappointed over and over and over and over on possible bull breakouts because crude's the only market that hasn't participated in this overall bullish rally. But a breakout above 85 sends crude oil to 105. That would be bad news, maybe, psychologically. Maybe your gas prices would go up a little bit. But I'm in Wisconsin right now, and the price of gas is down here near $2.50. So there's we're still at extremely, extremely cheap prices. And when crude oil was above at 100 from 2011 to 2014, the S&P moved up 35%. So they can both move in tandem. And I'm very optimistic and bullish on all markets. So that's where I see the opportunities.
Alan, that was great. I don't appreciate that you didn't give me the pick that I wanted, but that's okay. I've become to grow accustomed to that.
I will tell you one thing. It's like calling a recession, or it's like that doesn't make you money. What's important here is how the markets are going to perform. Being 100%. Right, and I know you hate to hear this, being right is not why we do this. We do this to make money.
100%. No, Alan, you're very consistent on that. And those are two great plays, XLRE and XLE. They both seem to have underperformed the S&P over the last 5 years. So it's kind of a little bit of a value play for you. And that looks really good. All right, I'm going to stop my share here. All right. Thank you, Alan, for that. Let's move over to our newest analyst, Enrique Abeda. Enrique, how are you? And good to see you again. I'm going to pose the same question to you, and I'm going to see if you can not dodge it like Alan did. I would like to know who you think is going to win coming out on Tuesday, and then what are you looking at right now that has your interest based on that estimation?
Yeah, I will answer your question very directly with my own amateur political analysis, but I did want to add one thing. I couldn't agree with Alan more about his analysis of the trend and the fact that the who wins this election won't ultimately change that trend. So, you know, I do feel very strongly that Alan's conclusion and point is a very powerful one. In regards to the election, you know, look, we look at the data. There's the saying that past performance is no indicator of future performance is actually not true in physics or in life. You know, we have data and it certainly evolves, but the best thing we can do is look back at the past data to try to make a conclusion about what will happen next. Historically, in two elections, Trump has underpolled, not overpolled. So we're 2 for 2 there. We're going into this election, and despite the controversy, we'll say, over the betting markets, the polls either have Trump even or up slightly on Kamala. And so I would just stick with that. You know, I also think, and this is not meant as a moral, philosophical, or political statement, that having a woman of color as the first elected president, I think there will be a portion of the electorate that will say they will do one thing and not do that thing because of just, you know, history and all that. And again, I'm not making any moral comments here one way or the other. What I'm saying is I look at the data and Trump's underpolled and he's polling even or up right now. So I'm going to go with that. And second, I think that there's just, you know, there are groups that have long-term biases, and I'm going to be surprised that the combination of those two events will have Trump not moving forward as the next president. Now, I've got, you have any questions, Doug, or go to the next
one? No, thank you for that. So let's move on. So assuming that is the case, what sectors or what plays are you looking at to trade coming out of the election?
I'm going to go somewhat contrarian too. I'm not a contrarian by nature. I actually believe in following trends to make real money. But I will say, as a trader, I am a contrarian that when I see everyone leaning to one side of the equation or one view, I wonder how much has been discounted of that view. So what I would say is the strong consensus at this point is that this will be a contested election, highly contested, could take days, could take weeks, could take months, will go to the courts, et cetera. I don't know. I don't necessarily disagree, but getting to Alan's point, I don't think it's going to matter. You know, I remember Gore Bush and the hanging chads, which took, 3 months. Now, that was in a very different market environment. We were already in the correction there. But as much, we are more politicized or, perhaps polarized today, but we survived that just fine. We survived this, even with Biden Trump, people forget that it was 3 days before we knew. So I'm going to come out and say that I think the election's a big nothing burger. Both candidates have said the punch bowl is out. We're going to spend as much as we can on as many things as we can, and I'm going to hold them to their word. Gold seems to agree, and other precious metals. So my contrarian view here is I don't really care about the election. I fundamentally agree with Alan, but I actually think this election in particular, it's just going to go off. It may take 3 days. It may take 3 weeks. It's going to be a non-item issue in the election. So that doesn't mean I don't think there's a very interesting way to make money. But I've got one trade for both candidates that I think works both, which will also be contrarian. I would buy Bitcoin. I think that gold is telling us that both candidates are just going to spend to infinity. Again, I'm data oriented. Past is future. They've been spending to infinity. I see no reason for them to stop spending to infinity. There's no member of any parties that have any power that are going to stop that. So I think that stores of value will continue to gain value as we devalue our currency. I think this is a process that doesn't break for decades. Maybe not even in my lifetime. I'm not that young, but I'm not that old either. What I think happens here is I think that Bitcoin is going to be pulled up by gold. Gold is actually leading Bitcoin, and there are significant portions of the population, especially globally, that believe in Bitcoin as much as they do gold. You know, my favorite statistic, and I like gold, don't get me wrong, but, gold grows 3% a year. We got 7.23% growth left in Bitcoin for the rest of eternity. So, in 2 years, gold's going to go. And when gold goes up, guess what? More gold comes out of the ground because people are making more money. That ain't happening with Bitcoin. So, I think that there's a lot of angst around this Bitcoin move. If Kamala wins, Bitcoin's going to get crushed and all that. I think that you're going to see the opposite. I think, Bitcoin consolidates and then it moves in a stair step function. That means when it breaks out, it doesn't go from 72 to 74, it goes from 72 to 90. So I'm going to say, into your end, Bitcoin 100,000. I think we got a solid shot. Now, maybe it's January 22nd. I don't know, but I like that trade either way. And I think the markets are, I listen to what the markets are telling me. Gold and silver and palladium and platinum, they're all true. Bitcoin itself is telling me this. They will spend either one, that we absolutely know it. And I think Bitcoin, when I say catches up with gold, it's still higher than gold year to date. It's still up like 70% versus gold 40. But I think the near-term charts rally. And I'll say not only Bitcoin 100,000, Bitcoin a million. I don't believe in maximalism. I don't care about any of that stuff. You don't use Bitcoin for anything else than an asset. But we're going to 100K and then we're going to a million after that.
Well, I was wondering where you're going to go with the actual price of it. I saw someone post something in our internal channels here at Paradigm saying $279,000 Bitcoin next year. I know some people like Michael Saylor and others have come out with much larger numbers, but 100,000 by the end of the year, no one.
Yeah, can I give you one piece of data? Because this is all like, you know, I won't say kind of made up. If you were to take Bitcoin and put it at the same market capitalization of gold where it is today, the price would be $989,000. So, you know, I'm not saying gold's going to stay where it is today. Gold probably goes higher. But do I think Bitcoin sometime in the next 10 years will be worth what the market cap of gold is? Considering gold will grow 40, 50%, Bitcoin will grow 7%. I do. And therefore, I'm going, you know, $1 million on Bitcoin.
I love it. Enrique, thank you very much for that. All right. So that's a Trump contested win, but a Trump win and Bitcoin. And we even got a price target from Enrique for 100 grand on Bitcoin. I know a lot of people will be happy with that. Before we get to our next guest, I want to welcome Sean Ring to the show. Sean, good to see you. Welcome. Glad you can make it. That's all right. That's all right. Glad you're here. What we're going to do, I would like to move next. Byron, you know, I have a rule. The man with the oil derricks in his background gets to go third. That's a very hard and fast rule. Everyone knows that about me. So, Byron, let's go with you next. Give us your take on the election, who you think is going to win, and the sectors that are going to benefit most as a result.
Yeah, those aren't oil derricks. Those are the head frames of the mines, of the copper mines of Butte, Montana.
Of course.
I'm working remote. I'm very remote. I won't tell you how remote I am, but it's measured in many thousands of miles. And it's a pleasure to be here. And thank you, everybody out there, for watching.
And Byron, I didn't mean to offend you.
I love oil derricks, too. They could easily be oil derricks.
Okay. All right. Good.
And it's just that's the wallpaper screen that I have on my computer, on my traveling computer, you know. Okay. Enough of that. Election. I used to think that, you know, election day was election day and people got elected, you know. And then, you know, through life and experience, whatever, I learned that, you know, election day is just the day that they start to count the votes, because you win or lose your election in the months and the, you know, the weeks and the months and even the years ahead of the election, you know, in terms of the preparation, plowing the ground and everything else. You know, candidates go out there, they introduce themselves to people, people get to know them, you get comfortable with them. And, you know, it's a lot like buying a newsletter subscription. You know, you people out there in newsletter land, you know, you buy your subscription one at a time, as far as we're concerned. You know, you listen to us, you think, oh, okay, these guys know what they're talking about. You lay down the credit card and you buy the $49 a year subscription or whatever else you buy, the more expensive one. Same thing with politicians. You know, people get comfortable and they say, yeah, okay, he's all right. Yeah, she's all right. Oh man, no way. Not voting for that person, you know? And that there's an element of religion to it, in the sense that, you're born Catholic or you're born Jewish, or you're born Democrat, you're born Republican. You know, maybe you leave the fold, maybe you see the light, whatever, and you go over to the other side. But anyhow, this has been the strangest election I've ever seen in many years that I've followed, going back into the 60s, which gives you a hint of, you know, how the date on my driver's license. The person who has the momentum, the person who's, you know, just mopping the floor right now with the other side is Trump, you know. I mean, serving French fries at McDonald's and driving the garbage truck and, I mean, holy smokes. I mean, the other side has just, dropped the ball big time. When it comes down to, you know, who's got the turnout machine, you know, who's got the momentum. I mean, Trump seems to be that way. But at the same time, you know, the Democrats have a system. They have an election system. And they're very, you know, when they talk about our democracy, they don't mean our democracy. They didn't mean their democracy. They mean the system that keeps them in power most of the time since 1932. You know, I mean, this is there's a very Democrat oriented theme in American history for the last, you know, almost, you know, 90 some years, 92 years. So, if you want to know who I think is going, I think Trump's going to win. It's going to be a squeaker here, squeaker there. He's going to blow out here, blow out there. Lots of surprises. The down ticket races are going to be horribly mangled with all the mail-in voting and, you know, the midnight ballots and all these, you know, I mean, I'm from Pennsylvania. Don't tell me about midnight ballots. I could tell you stories, you know. And so, you know, I think the Senate's going to go Republican. I think the House is going to be close, deep Republican. Trump, yeah, probably. If it isn't, there's going to be a problem here, because you know who the real loser of this election is? I mean, they've just been smashed, crushed into the dirt. People hate them. They despise them. The loser of this election is the mainstream media. Because if you're a conservative, you long ago gave up on mainstream media. You're like, oh yeah, New York Times, Washington Post, CBS News. You know, who wastes their time reading that stuff? Although I do read the New York Times, Washington. I read the Washington Post so that you don't have to. Okay, I mean, you know, paradigm-based subscription. You know, I read it so you don't have to. I read it like when back in the Cold War, I would read Pravda, you know, in the Soviet newspaper. Just to, you know, what are they saying? What are they lying about? Whatever they're lying about is important, you know. So the loser is the mainstream media. Coming out of all this, you know, the conservatives are going to be confirmed that the mainstream media hates us. They think we're garbage. Everything else, you know. But even a lot of Democrats are starting to say, oh, I can't trust this media. They're wrong, you know. So there's going to be a lot of confusion in terms of, where do we go now? Because where do we get our news? You know, we get our news from lots of sources, but the mainstream media is the big loser here. And you know, whoever winds up, you know, in power, we will see. You know, it's not, you know, if Kamala is not going to be the president, she's going to be the person pretending to be president, being puppet stringed, you know, with their 15,000 Democrat appointees staffing the government. You know, Trump, he will be a president. He will be presidential. But again, he needs 15,000 appointees to staff, you know, his government. Where's it all going to go? Okay, that's sort of the long answer to that question, who's going to win on Tuesday, you know.
Okay.
As far as what sectors are going to do well, everybody out there, if you do not own physical gold and silver yet, what the hell have you been waiting for? Okay. I've been doing this for 22 years, since Bill Bonner published my first letter to the editor in the Daily Reckoning. I have never had a week or a month or whatever where I didn't say, imply, whatever, buy gold, buy silver, whatever. If you had bought gold or silver at any point at all in the last 22 years, unless maybe like in the last few days when gold took a little slide, you would be up, okay? Physical gold. So physical gold, physical silver. If you don't have some, get some. If you don't want to get coins and all that, go to Sprott, Sprott, Sprott physical gold, PHYS, physical silver, SILV. Go get that. You know, I mean, they have real gold in a real vault in the Canadian Mint. There's your gold. Okay. You know, get physical, like, as the song says, you know.
You're not going to sing to us, are you? You're not going to sing to us, are you, Byron?
No, I'm not going to sing to you. No.
Okay.
Look at that chart. I mean, come on, you know, come on. Where have you been if you don't own physical yet? Where have you been?
Just sorry to interrupt, but that's a 5-year chart. Yeah. That's a 5-year chart. That is a long trend up and to the right. That's beautiful.
Yep. There you go. Okay. So now, if you want something else, you say, well, you know, gold, silver, you guys always talk about that. Tell me something else. Tell me something I don't know. Okay. Have you read the Rickards Strategic Intelligence newsletter for November, which just got published, I guess, today or last night, whatever? You know, Jim Rickards gives his talk about, you know, what's going on with the election. Zach has a recommendation. Dan has a recommendation. I have an article. My article is all about the looming block obsolescence of the entire strategic triad of the United States. Our Minuteman missiles are out of date, and 1960s era design. Those Trident submarines are coming to the end of their useful life. The air section, you know, the bombers, the newest B-52 bomber was built in 1963, you know, and you know, the B-1s, the newest one was built, you know, 40 years ago. The B-2s, the newest one was built, you know, 35 years ago. I mean, the air part of the triad, the missile land-based part of the triad, the sea-based part of the triad, it's all block obsolescence. And the Defense Department has a huge multi-trillion, trillion with a T, program to build new stuff, okay? And that's, whether it's Kamala or whether it's Trump, that stuff is going to have to happen. We're going to replace the missiles, going to replace the submarines, going to replace the bomber. Who's going to benefit? Well, you know, the big primes are, you know, I mean, Northrop Grumman, NOC, Northrop, is the big, you know, missile and bomber builder, you know, the B-21 bomber and the follow on to the Minuteman. And then General Dynamics is the big submarine builder for the next generation. It's called the Columbia class of submarines. So I wrote about it just in this issue of Strategic Intelligence. Go there and read it. I give you a talk. I talk about nuclear weapons, but I talk about a recent visit to the Trinity site in New Mexico where they cooked off the first nuclear bomb. But then from that, I segue into, you know, the strategic triad. But anyhow, if you don't have gold and silver, get some. And if you're looking for something that's sort of agnostic as to Trump Kamala, but is absolutely going to happen in the next, you know, it's a generational thing. It's going to be going on for the next 20 years. Submarines, missiles, bombers, military industrial complex. And if, you know, those are some names. If you just want, you know, an ETF or something, there's five or six of them out there, you know, SPDR and, SPDR is XAR, I think. And, iShares is ITA, you know, so, but I'll be talking about it a lot in future issues. So if you have, if you're just sort of, you know, bouncing around on YouTube and you're not a subscriber yet, you know, go to the link and subscribe and you can read about it. Okay. Thank you.
Excellent. Byron. Yeah. Thank you for that. And we've had a lot going on geopolitically in the last few years. I mean, we're fighting wars in two different spots right now. And the threat of them just getting worse and worse is only going to help those companies. So those are good plays, and that's regardless of who wins. So that's a good, as you point out, that's a good spot to be in. All right, Byron, thank you very much. I'm going to move over to the man on the left of Byron for me, and that's Dan Amos. Zach, you're going to carry the water at the end of... Oh, no, you and Sean are next. So, Dan, I would like to turn it over to you. You write a lot with Jim Rickards, follow a lot of his stuff. You do a lot of his analysis for his trades and that sort of thing. So what do you see happening in the election? Who do you think is going to win? And what are the plays that have your attention right now as a result of that?
Yes, this month marks my 10th year working with Jim Rickards, and it's been an awesome experience. And Jim has been uncanny in his ability to call elections ahead of time. In 2016, he predicted Trump would win. In 2020, he predicted Trump would win with... You know, as Republicans likely suspect, you know, with the mail-in balloting, it was a very, very unusual election in the sense of we were all still locked down under COVID with mail-in ballots and all that. You know, we haven't fully adjudicated, you know, how it played out. But anyway, a lot of people have suspicions about it, you know, and I don't want to say anything that would, you know, get us in trouble with YouTube here, but you know, Jim has a strong opinion now that Trump will win. And I completely agree with him. I'll just mention that, you know, he's masterfully, as Byron said, handled the last couple weeks here with dominating the news cycle. His team has been very, very good at social media, including many people, the youth on TikTok and so forth, just going viral there, which has completely offset the mainstream media. Which, you know, when you look at things like the Joe Rogan show or the other mm-hmm. podcasts he's on, they're 50 to 100 times the mainstream media's audience. So I think we will be surprised the degree to which he adds to the party in terms of in crucial swing states and urban areas. He's going to peel off a lot of traditionally Democratic voters. And they just, I'll just add one more thing. You know, Tucker Carlson's networks, I saw earlier this week, my family, Art of the Surge. It is a documentary. It's just nothing but behind the scenes. It's very recent, including the Butler shooting. And you see the way he interacts with the crowds, and they interview a lot of his supporters. And he just has a way of connecting with regular American people that you really don't see among a lot of other candidates. So I do think his quiet support, poll, you know, support in the polls will really cause a big surge in support. And I do believe about, was it 63% voter turnout in 2020, which was the highest since the Civil War, I believe. It could be higher this time. And if he has all the enthusiasm on his side, I think he will actually take a lot of contested House seats with him. So I think the likeliest outcome is actually a Republican sweep. And surprisingly, I don't think that's initially bullish, because I've noticed a lot of hedging in the 10-year Treasury bond market. People are very concerned, especially globally, about everything he's promised. And, you know, it's his classic style to promise a lot and then, you know, work from there in his negotiating style. You know, he's promised a lot of tax cuts and tariffs, and he wants to do, has a lot of big, bold ideas that would really transform the tax system. But one thing that bond holders don't like is, you know, unending deficits or an acceleration of that. That begs the question of, and this is very, very complex. So multiple dynamics here. Then the Fed would react by saying, and, you know, the Jay Powell Fed right there, they've got their narrative on inflation. They may say, oh boy, this could be very inflationary. If there's a Republican sweep, we're going to have to take out some of those rate cuts with our speeches, right? And I don't think the stock market's going to like that. So I would say in that environment, so two picks here. Two of them are Barrick Gold, which just went out to Strategic Intelligence readers today. It's a gold mining stock. GOLD is the ticker. This is a company that I think could win under either scenario. You know, if I'm more surprised and Kamala does win, I just think either way, gold's going higher, because we really have, under either candidate, we have, I think, difficult decisions to make regarding the fiscal situation in the country. The biggest surprise in the past couple of years in the macroeconomy has been the deficit blowing out at 6% of GDP. This is wartime level deficits in a full employment economy, where you know, and it's remarkable that the only thing that's kept the market up has been everyone's expectations, and you know, that the economy's great. But in the short term, a blowout out deficit stimulates the economy. In the long term, it makes it more dependent upon government and so forth. So the end result of all this is, and under both candidates, is more pressure will come on the Fed to regrow its balance sheet and to monetize a lot of this debt. And I think this is very bullish for gold. I like this stock because despite gold's steady bull market, it's been very, very orderly, and we have not seen participation among Western investors yet. I think that could change rapidly, and this stock could go up, you know, 50% by early next year, and probably triple or quadruple over the course of the next 4 years. A second idea would be ConocoPhillips, COP. That's also in the Strategic Intelligence portfolio, and it's a very well-managed oil and gas company. They've got a Willow project in Alaska that's very exciting, and they've got a lot of great acreage. So it's about half and half oil and gas. Natural gas has a lot of upside potential. If we have a colder than normal winter, if as we steadily build out LNG and export it overseas, as a lot of data centers really, like, it's multiple years to get nuclear hooked up to data centers. So in the short term, they're hooking up natural gas generators. The quickest way you can spin up electric generating capacity in this country from a permit basis is through natural gas fired plants. So I do think natural gas could surprise on the upside in the next few years. And with that, I'll turn it back to you and see what the other guys have to say.
Okay, so we've got GLD and COP, right? Or is it not GLD, it's gold actually, right?
G-O-L-D, Barrick Gold.
Barrick Gold, okay. Yeah, I mean, and looking at that Barrick chart, I mean, we're at gold at all-time highs, and that thing hasn't even hit a five-year high. So it seems as though, and I'm no analyst, everyone here knows that, but it seems as though there's a lot of room to run when as gold continues to climb higher. And I think Jim's called for what, 3,000 gold by the end of the year. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And what's gone up a lot faster than the stock price is its earnings estimates. And I still think they're too low for 2025.
Fantastic. All right, Dan Amos, thank you very much, sir. Zach, you are now on the clock. I want to know, Zach's right down in right outside Atlanta, not too far from our good friend, James Altucher. Zach, what are you seeing? Who's going to win, and how are you going to play it?
So I do think that Trump is going to win. I think that some people made some good points about how he polls light, because it's kind of embarrassing in some circles to say that you're voting for Trump. So he may not be the socially acceptable choice, but a lot of people understand some of his policies, even though his personality may be difficult to stomach his policies are pro-business, pro-jobs, and should be relatively good for the economy. I do agree with Alan Nuckman, and this hurts me to say that, but I agree with Alan in the sense that this isn't choosing. We don't get paid to choose the election unless you're on Polymarket, but even then, it's not the same as, you know, a large long-term investment profile or a long-term investment or long-term trading plan. And so I do think that we need to look at both sides of this specific event and say, you know, how can I make money if this happens and how can I make money if that happens? So I don't want to bet the farm on Trump, but I do think that that is a more likely outcome than Harris at this point. But let's think about two different areas of the market, one that could do well if Trump wins and one that could do well if Harris wins. Under Trump, I really, really like the private equity industry right now. And that would be companies like Blackstone, Carlyle Group, and KKR. And the tickers for those are BX for Blackstone, Bravo X-Ray, CG, Charlie Gulf for Carlyle Group, and then KKR. What is K? Kilo, Romeo. So those companies, they basically are big institutional investors. They typically take in money from endowments, retirement funds, big investors put their money with KKR, put their money with Carlyle Group. And then Carlyle or Blackstone is required to invest that money. Now, the really cool thing about this business model is that Blackstone will make money regardless of whether the investments go up or not, because they charge a management fee on an annual basis for just managing that money. But if the stocks that they invest in, or the private companies they invest in, or the real estate they invest in does increase in value, and Blackstone sells a company at a, you know, at a profit, Blackstone gets to keep 20% of those profits. So they're not harmed if their investments go down, but they do make money if their investments go up. I mean, wouldn't we all love to be in that business where you make money if you're right and you don't lose money if you're wrong? That's the business that Blackstone, Carlyle Group, and KKR are in. Now, here's why I think they make sense in a Trump environment. If Trump wins, it's going to be pretty positive for the markets. I think we could get a bit of a sugar rush for a week, a month, where markets trade sharply higher because there's less chance for regulation, because investors are more likely to be taxed attractively. And so that could drive the market higher. If the market is higher, that means that Blackstone, Carlyle Group, and KKR can sell some of their investments, maybe their private companies that they own that they could list on the exchanges, or even existing companies that they have that are already trading, they can sell some of their shares and they can recognize those large profits, the 20% of their investors' profits, and then in turn send out dividends to their investors and so forth. Another reason why these companies would do really well under the Trump administration is because carried interest, one of the ways that these companies continue to hold on to money instead of having to pay taxes as their stocks move higher, will likely continue under the Trump administration. So they'll be taxed more attractively, and that will help their stocks to move higher as well. So private equity should do very well under the Trump administration. Under the Harris administration, I do believe, like several other on this call, that gold will trade higher. Gold, silver, other precious metals will trade higher. A big part of that is the tax and spend policy of the Democrat side. And you can talk about whether that's good or bad for social issues and so forth. But from a pure economy side, Democrats tend to tax more, to spend more. And I know Republicans are spending as well. And I know that, you know, there's irresponsibility on both sides of the aisle. But it's accentuated under a Harris administration. And that would drive down the value of the U.S. dollar, because you're either going to have to inflate that debt away, or you're going to have to figure out some way to default on the debt, but it's going to be hard to continue to pay down the debt. So deflation in the dollar simply means that the price in dollar terms of these precious metals will move higher. Now, I do want to own physical gold, so I'm not going to contradict Byron at all. I think that's a great way of doing it, but there are some other ways to play it. And traditional miners may be under a little bit more pressure than you might think, because under a Harris administration, the price of gold might move higher, but also the price to get to that gold could move higher, because the cost of fuel, the cost of labor, that could be a really, really big one. The cost of importing, you know, who knows exactly how that would work. Many of the other and even regulation just would be a headache under the Harris administration. So miners themselves may wind up with much higher cost to go alongside the higher profits or the higher prices for selling gold. But some of these streaming gold companies who already have agreements in place that say, I can buy gold at a specific price. So they have an agreement in place that they can buy gold at $500 an ounce or $1,500 an ounce or $2,000 an ounce. They're not as hurt by regulation. They're not as hurt by higher costs, but they do still get the benefit of higher gold prices. So I like Royal Gold, which is ticker RGLD. It's one of many streaming or royalty companies that can make money with higher gold prices and aren't hurt quite as bad by higher regulation or higher kind of extraction costs that may hit more traditional miners under a Harris administration. So all should do well, but I think some of the streaming and royalty ones will do the very best under a Harris administration.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense, Zach. I mean, I'm looking at this chart compared to the previous gold chart, and it, like, when you're pulling stuff out of the ground and you've got energy costs that are going through the roof, you've got labor costs going through the roof, who knows what their electricity charges are doing. I assume those are also going up, not to mention insurance and those types of things. It's harder to be a producer than it is to just be a streamer. So that makes a ton of sense to me. Thank you very much, Zach. We have two more people. We got Sean Ring, writer of the Rude Awakening every day. We're going to talk to Sean, and then I'm going to introduce a quick special guest, Ray Blanco, who was not able to join us on this call, but he pre-recorded his take on the election. So we're going to put that in here as well. So let's start with you, Sean, though. Who do you think is going to win, and how are you going to play it?
And hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in. And, well, I, you know, listen, I'm pretty naked in the root about who I'm supporting, even though I don't have a vote anymore. But I do think Trump will pull it out. I think, interestingly, with Trump, the one thing that he has to worry about right now are the one-issue female voters. You know, those women who aren't actually dating any men, who only care about killing fetuses they aren't carrying in states they don't live in. And if he could get past that abortion vote, he's going to be just fine. I think they're the only people in the world who literally hate his guts right now. And funnily enough, that was Doug French had said that to me on a call I did for our Paradigm Press YouTube channel. And I was like, really? Is that going to matter? And I actually looked into it more. I do think that really is Trump's only stumbling block. I don't think the tariff thing matters even a little bit. And I might be disagreeing with some of you out there. Sorry about that. But the reason why I don't think tariffs matter is, as a percentage of U.S. GDP, tariffs are only like 27%. Okay, tariff-related trade. Like that, it is comparatively, these are staggering numbers. For a little country like Luxembourg, it's like 388% of GDP. And for a powerhouse like Germany, I'm sorry, former powerhouse like Germany, it's 99.88% of GDP. So there are countries that are screaming about this and are going, oh my God, you can't do this. You're going to wreck it. Yeah, America will wreck those countries a little bit more. But I don't, to the American voter, you know, yeah, some things will get more expensive, but most Americans buy American anyway. And the domestic demand inside America is enormous. It's just, you know, it's not something that America has to worry about. India is very similar. India has enormous domestic demand. You know, countries like Japan and Luxembourg and Germany, you know, they are all export related because nobody really buys a lot of stuff for their countries. They're not nearly as much of a consumer. And again, as a percentage of GDP, consumption is 70% of U.S. GDP, where the rest, I think, of the G7 average is about 60-ish percent. So Americans just buy a lot more and a lot more of their own stuff. I also think it's worth noting that, you know, the only reason why Donald Trump had a big party in New York City, and let's call it that because it was, is because New York is in play. And I think if he is able to, and I don't know if he's going to be able to, but remember, he's a Queens boy, right? It's his hometown, and they treated him really shabbily for the past 8 years. If he could flip New York City somehow, and maybe the Democrats don't fiddle with those machines because they just assume that New York is going to vote Democrat, it's going to be Mondale like blowout proportions for Kamala, which I would love to see. Now, normally, assuming a Trump victory, if you recall in 2016 when he won, the IWM took off. Okay, so mid-caps were a huge beneficiary immediately because they knew he was just going to slash regulation. Now, I would normally say, well, just do that again. But since SMCI, which is Super Microcomputer, the company that just fell out of bed because even their auditors wouldn't lie for them, is, all right, they're only 2% of the index, but it is the IWM's biggest holding, which I think puts it at a disadvantage.
Now, is this the right one right here?
That's the IWM. I'm not recommending it. That's what took off in 2016. But like I said, SMCI is their biggest constituent stock, even though it's only 2%. So I'm not sure it's going to take off. What I do like, though, what I don't like, let me tell you what I don't like first. I don't like gold at all right now, which is the weirdest thing ever because I am personally long all sorts of gold and silver miners. If Trump wins, do not be surprised to see a 10% correction in gold, at least. And the reason why I say that is because people are going to be offloading gold and getting back into the stock market. Kind of echoing what Zach said, like we could see a really sharp pump in the equity indices. And they were, and even I just did my monthly asset class report today. I mean, even though they've had a terrible week, they're still really close to all-time highs. And I still think the SPX is going to hit 6,000 real soon anyway. I think it's just going to drift up there. But I would not be surprised if he got absolutely goosed on Wednesday's trading session if Trump wins. I'm looking for my notes here, Jed. Sorry, there we go. So what I would say, if you can, and I know not many people on the call can do this, if Trump wins, I would short the living crap out of oil. I think oil is going to just die. I mean, it's the only reason why it's at, where are we, $68 a barrel right now is because we've got like 2.5 wars going on. And it's just crap. It's traded terribly. It looks awful. Every time it pops, it gets smacked back down. And I think if Donald comes in and does all his negotiations, you know, you're going to see a $50 barrel. And people are going to go, how do we have a $50 barrel in crazy inflation times? And it's simply because the world economy is crap. And as you know, Matt and I have been talking about, they've kind of been back and forth about this over the last year. You know, Matt says it's, you know, the huge supply of U.S. shale, which I think is part of it. But I think now the crappy world economy argument is kind of outweighing that one. So I think, you know, broad market tech stocks will take off again. You know, it could be, you take your pick. My pick is Lumen. That's Lumn. And the reason why I like Lumen is that its chart looks good. It's already had a pop. It's got partnerships with Meta and other firms, and it looks like takeover bait to me. And it's, like I said, I prefer cheap stocks rather than your chunky expensive stocks. So this is what I'm looking at. I think, you know, the technical targets on this is about $18, but it might get taken over before it even hits there, which would be from here a nice 150-ish% gain in a short amount of time. So that's what I got for you.
All right, Trump and Lumens. When you started saying Lumens, I thought you were going to say Lululemon, but
I would love to test drive that, but I don't fit in them. So
yeah, no. $50 oil sounds good to me. I mean, maybe we can, Byron, you could speak to us refilling our strategic petroleum reserve. If that were to be the case, that'd be a good buy low opportunity. I don't think it's full again, is it?
No, the strategic petroleum reserve is a disaster. It's 40% of what it was, you know, 40% 4 years ago. Yeah. And that last 40% is almost unusable. If you pull that 40% out, you'll basically collapse the caverns. And so, if we have cheap oil, you can expect, certainly under Trump, you can expect government buying of both domestic and imported, because you got to blend it. You got to blend the, you know, the heavy stuff from imported to with the light stuff from the, you know, the shale oil, and mix it all together. Otherwise, it's useless to the refineries.
Yeah. So Byron, just to throw out, I know we're not into this part of the program yet. We're not in the roundtable yet. But what's the other half of buy low?
Ah, you sell high. Yeah.
Okay, so that's it. No further questions. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I think everyone would like to see $50 oil. That'd be great. We'll see what happens. I have one other guest. I mentioned him earlier, Ray Blanco. He pre-recorded this for us this morning. So let's go ahead now and play Ray's take on the election and how he's looking to play it.
Hi, everyone. Ray Blanco here with my prediction for the election outcome for 2024 and how you could play that. So I'm predicting a Trump win. His polling is much stronger than it was in 2020 and 2016. And as of now, the early voting returns are much stronger for Trump than they were in the last two election cycles. So just to get that out of the way, I believe Trump's going to win, and it's probably not going to be close this year. Now, I think the biotech sector could see a lot of upside under a Trump presidency. And that's just based on historical precedent from his first term. I mean, he's done the job before. If you look at biotech during Trump's first term, we saw it set record highs in the first couple of years after he came into office. You know, we saw biotechs move up about 40%. And that was before, you know, the COVID crisis hit. After that, they went even higher. But that was for some unique circumstances. Under more normal circumstances, we saw biotech do really, really well. You know, and that's due to Trump regulatory policy, his streamlining regulatory policy across the board. Under his FDA commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, we saw the streamlining of drug approvals. And in 2018, we saw 59 novel drugs approved, you know, more than double the approvals that we saw in 2016. And this really wasn't about lowering standards so much as it was about removing bureaucratic inefficiencies. And I think that's something we're going to see even more in a Trump second term with a vengeance. Give you a couple examples how that benefited biotech stocks. Let's talk about Spark Therapeutics. This was a gene therapy company, and their breakthrough gene therapy, Luxturna, became the first therapy of its kind to be approved by the FDA in 2017. That made Spark Therapeutics such a compelling value proposition that, you know, Big Pharma came in, Roche, and they snatched them up for $4.8 billion. I'm sure investors were pretty happy about that. But we saw other cases, you know, Alnylam Pharmaceuticals, the company has been around for a while, but finally they secured their first ever RNA interference therapy approval during the same period. So the improved streamlining of the FDA, improved regulatory efficiency helped accelerate innovation. Of course, it helped accelerate profit as well, because if you can get a breakthrough new product to the market soon, then you can make money sooner. So these are the catalysts I think we'll see in the second Trump term: further FDA streamlining, improved tax incentives for R&D, continued support for breakthrough therapy designations, and possible expansion of accelerated approval pathways. We all know Trump has been a big proponent of right to try. He signed that into law. The woman that tweets on his behalf from time to time when he can't do it himself, her life was actually saved by right to try. So we could see accelerated approval pathways under a Trump presidency. How do you want to capitalize? Well, you can invest broadly in, for example, the S&P Biotech Index, XBI, or you can pick selected companies with late stage breakthrough therapies, companies with strong patent positions in emerging therapeutic areas, and small to mid-cap biotechs with novel platforms that could benefit from these accelerated pathways. So if Trump's first term is any guide, biotech's going to do great in his second term, and it's going to be a great investment. Anyway, thanks a lot for your attention. Nice to talk to you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ray. All right, gentlemen. Here's what I like to do. We have a few minutes left. I just like to open up the table here, open up the room to see who has any comments on anything that anyone's any plays that any one of you have made, or anything else about the election. I mean, I know obviously, Byron, you're in Pennsylvania. That is seems to be the place to be for the election night. What do you guys think in terms of Pennsylvania?
Well, Pennsylvania is two different states. I mean, you've got sort of Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, a little Harrisburg, and you know, Penn State, State College. Those are blue areas, and everything else is pretty hard red. You know, you go around Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, you know, Harris Waltz yard signs as far as the eye can see. You go 10 minutes out of Pittsburgh, and it's just a sea of Trumpish red. You know, There are plenty of shenanigans that go on. I grew up there. I watched it happen. I knew political people downtown, you know, and yeah, you know, it's just sort of honest graft. You might say, well, you know, we just shade it one way or the other, you know, they make sure that the right people win all the time. And so in Trump's case to beat the system, certainly in Philadelphia, but you know, Pittsburgh too, you know, he's really going to have to get the turnout both there, but you know, elsewhere in the rest of the state. Again, we get back to these sort of momentum issues of the last couple of weeks. You know, serving French fries at McDonald's, driving the garbage truck. You know, things like you know the Madison Square Garden rally, which you know, became a national event. The people are just really excited, and then. You know, the soccer people have a term called, you know, own goal, you know, where you kick the ball, but you kick it into your own net. People will write books for decades about how, you know, Kamala and her campaign dropped the ball. So, I mean, the Trump talked to Joe Rogan, she turned him down. Trump went to the Al Smith dinner in New York. Kamala didn't, you know, I mean, just really dumb things, which, you know, do not reflect well on Kamala, the person, as a candidate. I mean, how bad of a candidate do you have to be not to go to the Al Smith dinner? You know, I don't get that, you know? And so it's just, you go there and you kiss the ring of the bishop and you give a speech and it's all written for you anyhow. All you have to do is read. You don't even have to think. But no, she didn't go. And then Joe Rogan, I mean, he certainly humanized Trump. I mean, you know, sitting there talking for 3 hours, and then he talked with J.D. Vance for 4 hours. I mean, I would like to know what other politicians out there, Kamala or anybody else, I'd like to know if many of them could, you know, sit there for 3 hours and speak intelligently, all sorts of things, you know, with Joe Rogan. Good luck.
Well, I mean, you make some good points there.
Can I make a point? I want to make a counterpoint.
So, absolutely, Alan.
As a trader, your number one focus should be, what if you're wrong? Okay, what if you're wrong? What is the worst case scenario? How does it impact you mentally and psychologically, and more importantly, financially? So, you know, it's not about being right. It's always being positioned. So if you're wrong, you're ready to trade for another day. We're not gambling here. This is not Texas Hold'em. I don't think anybody's saying go all in on anything. We, you know, that's not proper money management, that'd be irresponsible. So, you know, I want to point out, you know, that you always have to, I know it might hurt somebody, think about what if you're wrong on your opinion. And I've always said opinions are expensive, but what are you wrong and what is the worst case scenario? Because there's always opportunities next week, next year, next, you know, 10 years from now. So being right on the election isn't the end all be all. It's about being able to make money for the long term.
Alan, I couldn't agree with you more. You and I see eye to eye on almost every single topic, on almost every single call. You and I we're simpatico.
That's the word.
Simpatico. Yeah, we were.
Okay.
Separated at birth. That was what I'm trying
right.
to say.
We all want to make money. And it, you know, it's fun. It's funny that it really shouldn't matter how we get there. You know, everybody can have any opinions, but opinions don't pay the bills.
Well, let's do a quick roundtable if you guys have a second. I would like to know outside of the pick that you made, was there any one individual pick that you that stood out to you? Like, yes, that makes a lot of sense to me. So let's start with you, Dan. I mean, if anyone from any of these other plays, anything that's jumped out at you, aside from your own, obviously, that you wanted to highlight.
Yeah, I would say Byron's physical gold. If you don't already own it, I would own it. One other point that hasn't been made is the momentum in the real economy. And Jim wrote about this recently. The real economy is actually not doing well. Look at, for example, the jobs report out November 1st. It was way under expectations. We have had seasonal adjustments that have jacked it up. And the trend is from the upper left to the lower right. For guys who like chart trends, this is happening at a time when we're running 7% deficits to GDP. So that is why I like gold, because historically, when the economy is slowing, when unemployment rises, and the Fed responds with desperate rate cuts, which they might, by early next year, that's a perfect environment for gold. So I do think if Trump wins, like I said, you might see a spike in treasury bond yields, but you'll probably see them go lower. You probably see gold go higher. And I think just generally, if I can give general advice, the indices are driven by these Mag 7 stocks, where we just had a week of, not so great earnings reports. So I don't think the 2025 and 26 S&P 500 estimates are likely to be hit. So Trump has a few months, I think, to say, Biden, this is the Biden economy. This is what I inherited. This is what I propose. And from there, seek to build on that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's perfect. Thank you very much. Byron, let's go to you. Any other trades other than your own that or investments that stood out to you?
Well, I think we need to look look at other things in the in kind of the whole rest of the world. I mean, I'm always bullish on copper. I mean the price has gone down a little bit lately, but when we look at the out years, when we look at the demand curves of what's going to happen just in the normal economic build out of everything, building out artificial intelligence, rebuilding the grid for the US, for Canada, for the developed world, let alone building the grid in the rest of the world, China's Belt and Road Initiative, when we look, there is not enough copper to go around. And so the only thing that will happen is that, old mines are closing down. New mines are not opening fast enough. We had a 20-year deficit of exploration and development. So again, look at the copper mining sector, different than gold and silver. But there's some great names out there. Freeport MacMoran and company like Rio Tinto, BHP. Those are the big guys, but we've got a lot of intermediate, smaller ones that we talk about as well.
Great. No, that's perfect. Thank you, Byron.
I'm sorry.
Yep. No, thank you. That's perfect. Going back to the pulling stuff out of the ground. I mean, you're a geologist. I mean, shouldn't be surprised. All right, Enrique, were you able to pick out something that you thought that you agree with from the panel here?
Yeah, I think the defense stocks are really interesting. I think General Dynamic, GD, Lockheed Martin. What was the other one I had? L3, any of that. Yeah. I think it's, they've done well. The numbers have held in. The charts look pretty good. What's interesting is they actually all just recently sold off. So I think, I think it's just earnings related. I think the defense stocks are very interesting.
Okay, perfect. Alan, you're on the hot seat next.
As much as I like to say it, Zach has got a great point. Let's make money with people that are making money on money. Yeah. So I like the idea of going after the Blackstone and the boys. I think that's a great idea. And I'll just finish up. For me, it is important what you trade, but it's almost more important is how you trade and how you have proper risk management and how you handle positions when you're wrong. We don't want to be married to any one opinion or idea. It's being able to be on the right side with high probability over and over again for the long term.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Yeah. Following the guys, investing in the guys that don't lose money. That makes sense to me. Sean, we'll let you wrap up. What do you got? Which one stood out to you?
Let's say I'm wrong. Okay, let's do Alan's thought experiment. Okay, I'm wrong. Great. Get long gold and silver miners to the moon. Okay, yeah. I absolutely think that. And part of me, since that is my position, Mr. Nuckman, you know, part of me, little tiny bit, kind of hopes Cavill pulls it out. You know, I think if you get her in, just because all the economists think that Trump's policies are more inflationary, they're always wrong. So probably hers will be more inflationary, because those Nobel Prize winners said so. So, you know, again, there are so many different ways to play that. But whether it's Byron's physical gold, or you go to gold ETFs, or you play the miners like I've been playing them, you're going to be fine if Kamala gets it. You're probably going to be more than fine, at least on an investment basis. I don't know what your life's going to look like. That'll be a different thing altogether. But at least from an investing standpoint, you'll be fine.
Fair enough. Well, gentlemen, before we part ways here, I just want to kind of address the elephant in the room. The one man who we all look to when we're talking about politics and election and how to play it, Jim Rickards, obviously is not here today. He could not make the call, but I wanted to offer up people the next best thing, because earlier this week, some of you may know who are on this call, Jim shared with his readers what he called his biggest reveal of his professional career. Now, I don't know if that's actually true, but that's what he called it, because he's made a lot of calls over the years. He warned a lot of his readers and Americans about what he called an election conspiracy, and based on his review and his description of it, it's going to affect everybody in America. So if you haven't seen Jim's election warning, I suggest you do so before the polls close on Tuesday at the absolute latest. His warning includes some really important information to help people prepare for what's coming next, and a major change to his election meltdown thesis that a lot of his readers have followed him for over the last year or so. And he has a money move for people that they should make before election day. So what we did is we posted a link right below this video for you guys to check it out. It's in the show notes, and I suggest you take a look at it. It's one of Jim's most important reveals to date. So with that, guys, I just want to thank you all for joining us. Really appreciate your takes on the markets. Most importantly, as Alan has pointed out, it's way more important than who wins the election. We're here to help you make money. I just want to say thank you very much, guys. Thanks, everybody.